1134. And it's a selection, again, as it indicates at the top, from Sefer Melachim Beis, basically Perek Dalet, you know, the fourth Perek of Melachim Beis. And the topic of discussion, this is the first story Haftarah, the first three Haftarahs have been Nevuahs. This is the first, you know, this is the first Haftarah actually from any Sefer besides Yeshaya, right? The Bereishith Noach Lech Lecha Ra'al Yeshaya. And here it's Melachim, a story. The main person in this story is the Novi Elisha. And the Haftarah goes on to tell two stories of Nisim, of miracles, that happened with Elisha. Let's just read very, very quickly through the Haftarah. We'll skim, it's a bit of a long Haftarah, but we'll, you know, get the basic storyline. First story is as follows. Isha achas min hashev b'nei hanavim saw kal Elisha leimar. A certain woman from the b'nei hanavim, a wife of one of the nevi'im, yells out to Elisha asking for help. Basically, my husband has passed away. You know that he was a God-fearing man. Chazal say that he was the Navi Ovadia. This was the widow of the Navi Ovadia. Ovadia HaNavi was the contemporary of Eliyahu and Elisha, and Ovadia HaNavi had risked his life to hide the Navi Hashem during the reign of Achav and Izebel, when Achav and Izebel were persecuting and killing all of the Navi Hashem. So Ovadia risked his life to hide 150 Navi'im in a cave. So, you know, that was my husband. I'm basically, since my husband died, I've fallen on hard times, I'm terribly in debt, and my creditor, I have so little money, the creditor is going to come to claim my two sons, to take them off, you know, as slaves, right? They're going to be instead of the debt. What can I do? So Elisha's reaction is interesting, and we'll come back, you know, when we go back over the Haftarah, we'll try to figure out the first thing he says. Vayomer Eleha Elisha. So Elisha says to this woman who's clearly distraught, I mean, her whole life is coming apart, Ma'eselach, what do you want from me? I'm just a Navi, you know, like, Ma'eselach, what can I do for you? What am I going to do for you? So then, interestingly enough, he doesn't stop there, he goes on to say, Hagidi li ma'eselach ba'boyis, tell me what you have in the house. Batalmer, Eile shibchascha ko ba'bayis ki imasuch shaman. All I have in the house is a little jug of oil. So he tells her, go and borrow as many kalim, as many utensils as you possibly can from all of your neighbors. Then go and close the door and take this one little vial of oil that you have and pour it into all of the kalim, all of the utensils that you've borrowed, and you'll see what's going to happen. He doesn't tell her exactly what's going to happen. She leaves him. Right, she goes, she starts pouring the oil. All of these kalim, all of these utensils she borrowed are being filled up, and the oil keeps replenishing itself. Right, she asks her son, can you bring me another utensil? There is no other utensil. The oil has miraculously filled up, this tiny little jug of oil has miraculously filled up all of the many, many kalim, all the many utensils which she borrowed. This is, you know, the predecessor to the Hanukkah story, basically, you know, the oil that just kept going. Vatovo vatagei Elisha Elokim, she comes back, she tells the Navi Elisha what happened. Vayomer lechim nichriyas Hashem. So Elisha tells her, you know what, you should go and now you have a ton of oil, go sell all of the oil. Vishalmias nishyeh, you'll have enough to pay off the loan, so the creditor won't be able to haul off your two sons. Va'atu vonayach tichyi banosa. And there's not only going to be enough oil to pay off the debts, there'll even be a lot of oil left over, and it'll be enough to support you and your entire family from what's left over. No, a happy end to the story, tremendous nes, a tremendous miracle which Elisha Navi performs on behalf of this woman. That's the first story in the Haftarah. Second story begins Pasuk Ches and basically takes us to the end of the Haftarah. Vahi Ayom came to pass. Vayavor Elisha El Shunem. Elisha went on to a certain city, he passed through a city called Shunem. Visham Isha Gedolah V'tachzik Bov Lecholochem. There was a certain woman over there who prevailed upon him that Elisha should come to her house and have a meal there. And eventually it comes to pass, says the Navi, that every time Elisha traveled through Shunem, this woman would put him up. Not only did she put him up, but she built a special room to accommodate the Navi Elisha through his trip through Shunem. Right, that's Pasuk Tes. Vatomer Elisha, the woman says to her husband, Hinei no yodati ki ish Elokim kadoshu. I recognize that this man is a man of God, and he's a holy person. Right, it's interesting, the Gemara in Bracha says, how does she know that he was such a holy person? So the Gemara gives an interesting answer. It says the Gemara, when he would eat, she noticed that a fly never buzzed around the food. Interesting. Right, explain the Mefarshim. We know that we consider our own table to be like a mizbeach. We talk about that all the time, that the table on which we have our food is like a mizbeach. You know, it's holy. We treat the table with respect. The Mishnah Pirkei Avot says that one of the miracles that happened in the Beis HaMikdash is lo niras zevuv beBeis HaMitbachayim. That despite all of the carnage that was going on in the Beis HaMikdash, they were slaughtering animals left and right, they never saw a fly flying around all of these carcasses in the Beis HaMikdash. So nice, right? So Elisha, as a kadosh, as a holy person, when he said that his shulchan was like a mizbech, he really meant it. It was really literal. So the nisim of the Beis HaMikdash, explained the Mefarshim, applied to Elisha as well. So she says, I noticed, you know, I was watching while he eats, and I see that there are no flies. May no yodatik yishalokim kadoshu. I see that he's a holy person. So you nasin alias kir katano. Let's make a little room for him. Benasim lo shamito v'shulchan lekisei aminara. Let's have a permanent guest room which is going to be set aside for Elisha. And again, something that the average person wouldn't do. It's one thing to, you know, to put somebody else up in an existing guest room, to build a guest room, davka, for the purposes of the Navi. When it comes to, that's really a mesiris nefesh, above and beyond what the average person would do. Yeah, a real hachnasat zorchim. Right? Real, you know, incredible hachnasat zorchim.
Right?
Right? So okay, so he takes her up on the offer and he utilizes this new room. Elisha traveled with an attendant by the name of Gehazi, and Chazal indicate that Gehazi was not on the spiritual madrega of Elisha by a long shot. He was a person who, although he attended to Elisha, was very far from tzidkus in many, many of his actions. That comes out a little bit here in the story, but is also brought out more by Chazal in their discussions of the character of Gehazi. Gehazi is not considered to be a good person. But Elisha says to Gehazi,
he takes advantage of his
of his position.
Anything, he takes advantage.
Right. Chazal say that all the nedavas that people would give to Elisha Hanavi, so Gehazi, you know, Elisha would refuse them. Gehazi would say, okay, you know, that's Gehazi with a G, you know, when you make out the check, you know, that's, so he would pocket them. But Yomer Gehazi Naro, so Elisha tells his attendant, Gehazi, crawl Ashunamis Hazos, go call this Isha Hashunamis, this woman from Shunem. She comes, Yudgimo Vayomer Lo, Emorno Eleho, Necharadate Eleho with Kol Acharada Hazos, look, you made such a, you know, you put yourself out so incredibly for us. Malasoslach. What can we possibly do for you? She says, I'm fine, everything's good, you know, nothing to worry about. Vayomer malasosla. So Elisha says, no, you know, it's the person who's content, you know, it's very hard to buy them a gift, you know, so what do you do for such a person? Vayomer Gehazi aval bein ein lo v'isha zaken. Gehazi says, you know, there is one thing that strikes one. Her husband is older already, she's older already, and they don't have any children, this couple. Vayomer Krolo, top of 1135. So Vayikrolo Vatamud Vaposach, the Shunamis comes to Elisha. Vayomer Lamoed Hazer Ko Es Chaya, exactly a year from now, at Chovekes Bein. You're going to be hugging a child. Vatomer Ladoni Isho Elokim Al Tichasev B'Shiv Chosecha. She reacts by saying, please, you're a man of God, don't make fun of me. Don't tell me something which I know is not going to come true. I'm older, my husband's older. You know, we've probably been dreaming about this for a long time, but you know, don't get my hopes up. Mataro Isha Lava Taylor Bain. No, lo and behold, year passes, she gives birth to a child. La Moe Hazeko Eitz Chaya Shidiber La Elisha. Exactly a year after Elisha made this prediction, this nevuah, she has a child. Now, right now, if we stopped here, as we already put our finger on, this is the most obvious connection between the Sedra and the Haftarah, because the Sedra basically opens up with the very same Nevuah being made to Sarah Imenu, Right? A year from now, exactly, the Malachim tell her you're going to have a child that's going to be Yitzchok, Lamoyah, Zekor, Yitzchai, almost the exact same words. And, you know, very clearly this is the obvious connection. Here this woman is blessed with a son, just like Sarah Imenu was blessed with the son of Yitzchok. Right? The clearest connection between the Sedra and the Haftarah. We'll see, however, that although that's obviously a connection, I think the connections between the Sedra and the Haftarah go even deeper than that, as we'll see as the story develops. This isn't the end of the story. Right? This is really just the beginning of the story. Vaigdala Yolet. So this boy grows up, this miracle child who was brought into the world through the prediction of Elisha. He grows up, so he goes out to the fields, to his father where they're reaping. Vayomel Aviv Roshi Roshi, and all of a sudden he starts crying out to his father, "My head, my head." Vayomer Elanar So'eyo Elimo, he collapses there in the field. And the father quickly says to his attendant, "Quick, bring the boy back home to his mother." Vayiso'eyo, Vayivyeo Elimo, Vayeshav al Birka Adat Zaharaim Vayomos. And that afternoon, this miracle child passes away. Vatavat Hashkivel Mitas Isho Elokim. She brings him up in a, you know, just a very poignant moment. She brings this child up to the special guest room that she built for Elisha, and she puts the child on the bed, the dead child on the bed that she had set aside specially for Elisha. You can imagine the traumatic feelings that are going through this woman's, this woman's heart at this particular moment. Here, you know, this is the miracle child they waited so long for. And Nebuch, just like that, in the space of an afternoon, it passes away. Vatikra al Isha, so she calls to her husband. The husband doesn't know the fate of the child. The husband doesn't know that the child passed away. Vatomer, Shulchan oli echod min ha'na'arim ba'achas la'asonos. Go get one of the donkeys for me and one of the attendants to ride it. V'arutz ad Isha Elokim v'ashuva. I'm going on a trip to see Elisha. I'm going to go and see him and then come back. Vayomer, madua atolaches elav hayom. So the husband, again, the husband doesn't know what happened. The husband just knows that his son got sick in the field and he went back home. Right? It could be the husband didn't even think that the son was that sick. You know, his head hurt him, so you know he collapsed. Okay, you know, maybe the husband didn't think that it was necessarily a life-threatening thing. Okay, maybe he got dehydrated or something like that. So, you know, the husband doesn't suspect anything's up, and the husband asks his wife, "So, why are you running off to Elisha? Lo Chodesh v'lo Shabbos? It's not Rosh Chodesh. It's not Shabbos." And from here, Chazal derived the concept that Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh are times when it's proper, if one can, to be mekabel pnei rabbo, to go to one's Rebbe and to interact with the Rebbe, to greet the Rebbe, because that's, after all, the husband says, "I would have understood if it was Rosh Chodesh or Shabbos that you'd be going to the Navi Elisha, but here's just a regular day. Why are you going?" Batomer Shalom. She doesn't really answer. She says, "It's fine. There's nothing to worry about. Everything's fine." For some reason, she doesn't want to tell her husband that her son has passed away. Now, as the note over here mentions, the Sfardim, the community of Frankfurt are mine, and the Chabad Chassidim end the Haftarah here. Batomer Shalom. She says to her husband, "Everything's well." That's the end of the Haftarah in many of these communities. If you see, it's a little bit longer after that. I know many Ashkenazim on the Shabbos of Vayera start thinking that maybe they wish they were Sfardim or Chabadniks or Yekes. But the minhag of Ashkenaz is to read to the end of the story. Something we'll try to address a little bit later on tonight is why on earth the Sfardim, the Hasidim, and the Yekas would end the Haftarah smack in the middle of the story, right? The story isn't over yet, right? She runs off now to Elisha, and what happens? V'tachvo sha'asam, v'tom el naro nahag v'leich, al tarsor li l'rkov ki mamarti loch. She goes up to Har HaKarmel, to where Elisha is, and Elisha sees her from afar, and he says to Gehazi, "Here, look, oh, look who's coming, it's that Shunamis. Ator rutznali krosov emorla. So go now and run to her, and say to her, why is she coming? Hashalom loch? Hashalom le'ishay? Hashalom la'yolad? Is everything well with you? Is it okay with you? Is your husband okay? Is your child okay?" which, if you think about it, under the circumstances, must have hit her like a ton of bricks. What does she say? Atama Shalom. Yeah, everything's fine. Everything's fine. She doesn't want to divulge anything to Gehazi, but she travels up the mountain to Elisha himself. And she throws himself at his feet. So Gehazi sees this woman throwing herself at the Navi's feet. It's not the covetic, it's not right. He comes over, he's going to pull her aside. So the Navi Elisha says to Gehazi, leave her alone. I can tell that she's obviously upset. But yet, but I don't know what it's all about. Ordinarily, I'm a Navi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu would tell me what's going on. But here, I can see with my own eyes, she's obviously upset about something, but I have no idea what it is. HaKadosh Baruch Hu hasn't revealed to me what the source of her distress is. So she says almost bitterly to the Navi Elisha, I didn't ask for a child. Didn't I say that you shouldn't get my hopes up? And here you got my hopes up in the cruelest way. You actually gave me a child, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the child away while he was still young. In a certain sense, that's almost even worse than had I not been granted a child at all. So from that, Elisha understands what the problem is right away. So he says to Gehazi, Chagor Mosnecha, V'kach Mishanti V'yodcha V'olech. Here's my staff. I want you, Gehazi, to go take my staff and run back to the house of the Shunamis. Don't let anyone stop you. When you come back to the lifeless body of this child, take my staff and place it on the child's face. The mother says, Chai Hashem, I'm not going to leave you alone, Elisha. He follows him. Gehazi goes running past both of them, the Navi and the woman, the Shunamis. He does exactly what Elisha tells him to do. He takes the staff, places it on the child's face, and there's no response. The child doesn't wake up. He comes back and he says the mission was a failure. The child didn't wake up when I placed my staff on his face, when I placed the staff of the Navi on his face. So the Navi goes on to what seems to be a plan B. So Elisha comes in. The child is there dead. So he goes up after davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Elisha gets up on the bed and lies down face to face over the child. And basically places his mouth over his mouth, his eyes on top of his eyes, his hands on top of his hands, and he bent over him. And as Elisha lay on the child's body, all of a sudden life returned to the child. His flesh became warm again. So he gets off. He gets off the child and paces back and forth in the house, apparently davening. The pasuk doesn't say it, but apparently he's davening. So he goes back again onto the child and stretches himself out over the child. The article translates this, the child sneezed 7 times. And all of a sudden he opens up his eyes. The Shunamis, the mother, comes in. Here's your child, you can carry him home. She's overcome with gratitude, she falls on her face. She takes her child, she goes back. Again, another successful miracle, another nace, which has been performed by Elisha HaNavi. Again, Ashkenazim, understandably, end the Haftarah here, which is basically the end of the story of how Elisha brings this child into the world and performs Tchiyas HaMeisim upon him, that he comes back a second time. Two questions we're going to ask about these two stories. As we were going through, we readily were able to understand the connection between the second story and our Sedra. Right? The promise that's made to the Shunamis is almost word for word the exact same promise that's made to Sarah Imenu. And the result, I mean, it's almost the same story up to a point, right? they haven't had children for a long time, and all of a sudden, a year from now exactly, you're going to have a son. It happens in the Seder, it happens in the Haftarah. That connection is crystal clear. What's the first story doing here? Why is the first story part of this Haftarah? Right, the story with the oil. What's that got to do with the Seder? And the truth is, we have a very long Haftarah here. Right? It wouldn't really have hurt anyone had we just started the Haftarah eight psukim in. Right? I mean, you would have started halfway down page 1134, and that would have been it's also a respectable size Haftarah. You would have gotten a page and a half. I mean, just by contrast, Lech Lecha last week was just a page. Right? So instead, you have this very long Haftarah. Lechara, I mean, if we were putting the Haftarahs together, we would have started with the second story. We would have made it just the second story. The Isha Shunamis, the child, miraculously comes into the world, and how Elisha Hanavi miraculously brings him back to life. That would have been a complete Haftarah in itself. That still would have been one of the longer Haftarahs. Right? What's the significance? Why did Chazal see fit to stick in the story with the oil? Well, that's question number one. Question number two, we alluded to before. Why did the Sfaradim stop where they do in the middle of 1135? It's mamish the middle of the story. Right? I mean, it's a real cliffhanger. You don't know what's going to happen at the end. Right? The child has just died. She's just gone off to the Navi Elisha. And the husband turns and says, why are you going off? Everything's going to be all right. Don't worry about it. Okay? We cut the scene. We go straight to the brachas. Wait, what happened to the end of the story? Where's the end of the story? It's very odd. I mean, especially considering the fact that we have the story with the shaman. If I were doing it, I would leave out the story with the shaman and have everybody read the whole story with the child. Instead, what do the Svardim do? They put in the story with the shaman and they cut short the story with the child, which l'chara is the real connection between the Sedra and the Haftarah. It's very the choice of what to leave in and what to take out is seemingly a very, very bizarre choice.
Mary Ulfe, we find in the Sidra not only the connection, the similarity, but
the contrast.
The contrast.
Yeah. Right, right. So where would the contrast be over here?
The contrast would be here, the attitude of the people in the time of the Nevi'im,
right,
and the attitude of the son of Abraham, Ki Yadati,
right.
By Abraham we say, why Ki Yadati Asher? And here, Alpi Halchayudi, the woman,
right,
who lost her money and everything, the Noshe had no right to take. Take her children as slaves.
Right. So we want to highlight the rishus of the Noshe.
In that Sedra, we see Abraham, and here we see the contrast. What happened?
Right. Okay. Yeah. 100%. So does you want to say that the rishus of the Noshe stands in marked contrast to the tzitzis of Avraham
Avinu? It was not the rishut of Noshe himself.
Right.
It is the rishut of the people at that time.
Because they did not react. Right.
And maybe the common line even here is, and Shastom having children, Shastom, and nobody reacted.
Right.
They were allowed to do what they wanted. So we have a contrast,
right,
and also the...
Okay, very good, very good. I want to suggest a different connection. I want to suggest a different connection, perhaps, in just a minute, based on something the Meshech Chachma develops in this story. But Just Karavani, yeah.
Oh.
That's interesting. Because maybe there's a connection between the water being filled up and the oil being filled up, right? Maybe you could say that connection also. I mean, again, with all these sort of things, I don't know if there are any right answers or wrong answers. I mean, ultimately, it's, you know, it's... Especially being saved afterwards might refer to their character.
Her attitude with the Thomas Shalom, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. 100%. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like a Jewish predator. Sounds like a Jewish predator, yeah. And, right, I mean, Reverend Heffler points out correctly, I mean, you know, in Jewish law, you can't take somebody's kids as slaves if they fail to make good on a debt. Otherwise, a lot of people would be in trouble. But,
you do put your daughter into slavery sometimes when you do owe a debt.
Absolutely. That was common practice.
Right, okay. But
absolutely.
Right, but halachically, you know, certainly to give children away as repayment for debt, that was a practice maybe at the time, but halakhically it doesn't really, you know, it was the incorrect thing to do. He was wrong, the creditor was wrong to try to do that. I want to suggest something in this haftarah based on a mahalach, an approach, which the Meshech Chachma, Meir Simcha Cohen of Divinsk has in his Sefer Meshech Chachma. It has one comment on this haftarah. And the Meshech Chachma starts from the following question. In resuscitating the child at the end of the story. So we like to focus on the end of the story, right? Very dramatically, Elisha climbs on top of the child and somehow miraculously brings the child back to life. When you read the Haftarah, though, you realize that really that was plan B, right? Elisha had a plan A. Elisha said to Gehazi, here, take my stick, run over to the child, put my stick on top of the child's face, and presumably the child is going to wake up. And he did it, right? So how are we to understand that? What was Elisha thinking? Elisha obviously thought that was going to work, right? So what was Elisha thinking in commanding Gehazi to do this, and why didn't it work? Why was it necessary for Elisha to actually climb up on top of the child and not simply place his staff on top of the child's face? So says the Meshech Chachma as follows. Elisha thought in reviving the child to invoke the schusim, or the merits that the Shunammis possessed. The Shunammis was a very, very special woman. I mean, we see clearly from the beginning of the story, she went all out to provide for Elisha Hanavi. That's why she was deserving of having a child. And Elisha wasn't trying to pull some kind of rebbish shtick, so to speak, in reviving the child. Elisha thought to invoke the schusim of the woman herself. So which schus, says the Meshech Chachma, should Elisha invoke? So Elisha thought right off the bat, this woman has an unbelievable schus of Hachnasas Orchem. This woman has an unbelievable schus of Hachnasas Orchem, right? I mean, she built a guest room exclusively for me when I passed through town. That's not a simple thing. That's more than just we have a guest room and, you know, we'll even change the linens if we like you. You know, this is major Achnasas Orchem. So says the Meshech Chachma, Elisha took his Mishenes. Mishenes literally means something which one depends upon. She was a source of support for Elisha when he came through town. She was a Mishenes. She was a source of support, a staff for Elisha himself. Said Elisha, let me take the Mishenes, the symbol of her Achnasas Orchem, and place it on the child's face. That will symbolically invoke her Hachnasas Orchem, and that's a schus which can possibly cause the child to be revived. But it didn't work.
But she didn't even think it would work. She said she wouldn't leave him alone.
Right, she didn't think it was going to work, but it didn't work. Right? So then Elisha has to go on to plan B. Plan B is to invoke another schus which the woman must have. And says the Meshech Chachma, the second schus which we see this woman had was a tremendous degree of emunah and bitachon in the Navi himself. And says the Meshech Chachma, that emunah comes through despite many obstacles which the Navi throws her way. For example, the woman is coming up the mountain, and the Navi sends down Gehazi to ask the woman, how's everyone doing? How are you? How's your husband? How's your child? Now, we said before, I mean, presumably that hit the woman, that should have hit the woman like a ton of bricks, not only emotionally, but says the Meshech Chachma, you would think that that would call her belief in the Navi into question. What do you mean? You're asking me how my child is doing? You don't know that he passed away? You call yourself a Navi? Right? So you would think, says the Meshech Chachma, that something would go off in her mind. You know, maybe this Navi isn't everything that I thought he was in the beginning. I did everything for this Navi. I built a guest room for this Navi. I said, Isha Elokim Kaldashu. Maybe he's not 100%. Maybe that's not the... You know, no, but she doesn't doubt. What does she say? Batomer Shalom. Everything's fine. When she goes, a little earlier, when she leaves her husband and goes to the Navi, and the husband asks her, why are you running off to the Navi? She doesn't explain that our child just died. Why not? What does she think she's going to gain by keeping that information from him? He's going to find out. I mean, that's not the sort of thing that she's going to cover up. Apparently, she thinks that when she says shalom, it doesn't just mean in the sense of, yeah, don't worry about it, everything will be fine, let me go already. She really means shalom. I believe that Muna Shlema, that everything is going to be fine, so there's no need for me to tell you that he died. Because presumably, by the time I go to Elisha and work this whole thing out, he's going to be alive again. So why should I get you worried for nothing? Apparently, he's going to come back to himself. The very fact that she encounters an individual like Gehazi hanging around Elisha, and again, Chazal tell us that Gehazi was a less than perfect individual, and yet she doesn't engage in guilt by association, which would have been the natural reaction to anyone. This guy is Elisha's right-hand man. So what does that say about Elisha? No. Tremendous emunah, tremendous bitachon. And in fact, says the Meshech Chachma, Elisha himself says, you know, it's odd. Fa'ashem heli mineni v'lo higidli. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't tell me that the child, what happened. I'm not aware of the fact, benavua, that the child died. So why did Hashem do that? Says the Meshech Chachma is all conscious. This was a tremendous test of the emunah and bitachon of the Shunamis, and she passed with flying colors. Every test that was thrown her way, every nisayon as to whether she would be a balas emunah, balas bitachon, she passed with flying colors. She believed in the Navi and his direct connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu up until the happy ending at the end of the story. In a sense, emunah shalem, right? This is a story about emunah. And says the Meshech Chachma, it's that emunah in the Navi which revives the child. How does the child get revived? The Navi, the living embodiment of her emunah in bitachon, climbs on top of the child and he revives him, right? Says the Meshech Chachma, it's not the Navi, it's not the tefillos of the Navi which revive the child. Many of us may remember there's an earlier episode in Sefer Melachim Aleph where Eliyahu HaNavi, the Rebbe of Elisha, does a similar thing. He also revives a child who has died. But points out the Meshech Chachma, if you read that perek carefully, that perek describes how Eliyahu HaNavi davens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers, Vayishma Hashem b'kol Eliyahu. That's the pasuk earlier in Malachim. Here, the response does not seem to be to Elisha's tefillos. It says, yes, he davened, but it doesn't say, Vayishma Hashem b'kol Elisha. It says, Elisha climbed on the child, and in response to climbing on the child woke up. Says the Meshech Chachma, we have to view Elisha, so to speak, the body of the Navi Elisha, as being in a certain sense similar to the Mishenes, to the staff which was originally placed on the child. The staff was an embodiment of the schus of the woman in Hachnasas Orchim. The body of Elisha Hanavi, so to speak, was an embodiment of the schus the woman had of Emunah and Bitochon in a Navi and in the word of Hashem, which was channeled through that Navi. It's not his tefillos which worked, it was himself, you know, his very essence, the fact that he was being believed in by the woman, her schus was what revived the child. It wasn't Elisha. In a sense, the real hero of this story, the way the Meshech Chachma reads the story, is the Isha HaShunamis, right? She's the heroine. Elisha is almost, you know, like a peripheral figure. It's her belief in Elisha, and ultimately her belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is responsible for bringing the child back to life. She's really the heroine of the entire story. With that in mind, with that perspective in mind, so I think we can understand, first of all, why it is that the Sfardim snap the Haftarah Vatomer Shalom. Because the way we're explaining the story, it's really, the real point of the story is not the nes, which is brought about at the end of the story. It's the demonstration of Emunah, which the woman has. So when she says, when she responds to her husband who answers her, why are you running off to the Navi? And she says, Shalom. That's all we need to know. That's the pinnacle of the story. The story's over. Right? The fact that the child happens to be revived at the end of the story is almost immaterial. What we need to glean from the story is the tremendous emunah which this woman displayed despite all of the odds that were stacked up against her. Right? So that's how the Sfardim can end the story right there. And we haven't lost anything. We may not know what happened, you know, in the final chapter of the story, but what's important for us, the lesson of Emunah and Bitachon, we've gained, despite the fact that we haven't read to the end. Right, okay, very good. So we'll tie that into the Sedra Bezis Hashem towards the end. I think also, if you say, like the Meshech Chachma, that the lesson of the second story is the Emunah and Bitachon, of the Isha Shunamis, you understand also the connection to the story with the Shemen. Why is it so important to mention the Shemen story at the beginning? I think if you look through the Shemen story also, you have a very similar example of the emunah that a woman has in the Navi and what he tells her to do, even though, again, on the face of things, on the surface of things, it seems ridiculous. Let's go back and just look at the story again. This woman comes in a dire situation to Elisha. So Pasuk Beis, Vayomer Eleha Elisha, Ma Es Eloch. What do you want from me? We commented when we first read through it. It's a very callous kind of response. Ma Es Eloch. What do you want? What do you want me to do for you? I think the way, with the Meshech Chachma's interpretation of the second story, we might be able to suggest that maybe Elisha was testing her. Now Ma Es Eloch. So what does she do at that point? Does she throw up her hands and say, okay, you're right, you can't do anything for me, I guess I'll go find somebody else? No, she keeps pressing. She stands there. So then I think the way you have to read the pasuk, if we imagine the pasuk being played out in front of us, is Vayomer Eleha Elisha Ma'as Eloch. Pregnant pause, like they said. Right? So he's waiting. She's still standing there. And then after a few seconds, okay, I see you're still interested. Hagidi li ma yesh loch ba boys. Okay, you're still hanging in here? All right, so now let's move on to the piece of advice I'm going to give you. And if you read the piece of advice that Elisha gives the Isha, he doesn't spell out that there's going to be a miracle. Right? What does he say to do to her? What does he say to her to do? Go borrow, go run around to your neighbors. Right, remember, this is a woman who's deeply in debt. Right. If a neighbor who was deeply in debt came running over to me and said, "Oh, by the way, can I borrow all your pots and pans?" I mean, I might think twice, right? And if you were the woman, you'd certainly be rather embarrassed to run around and borrow pots and pans. And she doesn't know why she's borrowing pots and pans. Right, but
you assume she does because she has pots.
Right. Right.
But she might just be scared because I'm embarrassed and I'll just use the kill of my
Right.
You can definitely see that.
No, 100%. It definitely does not spell out that she went around, which is interesting in its own right. Right. No, but it is striking.
She leaves, but she shuts the door. Right. She leaves, shuts the door. She had to go somewhere. Take a look.
Right, no, but it is...
She goes inside, I have to shut the door.
No, but Taylor made too. She left from him, right. And she closes the door.
Right, but no, you're right. It does not say out that she went around to all the neighbors.
Well, if she didn't do that,
where she got the pops?
Assuming,
where
she tells her to go home and shut the door after she closed it with Caleb, and Willis says that she went and she shut the door.
So if she didn't bother with Caleb, wouldn't we assume that?
She was in the house, and then
you think that would be it?
She's getting
returned. Right, but I mean. See,
I think we're going to assume that she listened to the Navi and did it, don't you?
Right. No, it's a valid point because it doesn't say. But on the other hand, where did she get so many pots and pans from? She had enough. Yeah, but she had enough pots and pans to pay off the debt.
And then
so you could really say that had she gone, let's say she didn't go, but had she gone and gotten 10,000 pots and pans, she would have been all the more.
Right, on a phenomenon. So maybe you can claim, maybe you can claim, again, you know, it's speculative, maybe you can claim that Maybe she didn't have quite as much emunah as she should have had. But still, even with all of that, Elisha tells her, run around, go collect kalim, utensils from your neighbors. Right? And that's it. Right? That's all he tells her to do. Right. Right. So, Yotzaka kol kalim ho'ela. Right? Just pour oil into these kalim.
Yeah, himself, you see, the emunah.
Right.
Take so many pots. She could ask, what for?
Right, right.
I have a little jug of oil.
Right, so she says, well, what are you,
crazy? When you're really in trouble and someone gives you an AIDS, you kind of do stupid things to it. You know,
you would
do it. Yeah, you would do it. You wouldn't think, all right.
Okay.
Especially
the naughty dessert.
Right.
I want to suggest that at least on some level, again, maybe we can claim maybe she didn't do as much as she could have done, but she certainly displays a certain level of emunah in the words of the Navi in filling up the oil. So in that sense, there's a connection between the emunah of the Shunamis, which certainly is even more fleshed out, versus at least, you know, some level of emunah, which the Eshes Ovadia, the wife of Ovadia, displays in the first story. That's l'chara why, in picking this haftara, the two stories were put together. The emunah and bitachon, which a woman displays in response to the words of the Navi.
Didn't ask more
questions. Yeah. He told her to do. She went ahead and she did. L'chara, this might be a connection. Another connection, maybe even a deeper connection between the Sedra and the Haftarah. It's interesting, the Sedra opens up with Hachnas HaZorachim. Right? The quintessential Hachnas HaZorachim, the beginning of Vayera. Right? Just as Hachnas HaZorachim plays a big role over here. But the end of the Sedra ends off, not with Avram Avinu's Hachnas HaZorachim, but with the tremendous emunah in Bitachon displayed by Avram Avinu when he's asked to do something which on the surface seems ludicrous. HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes and tells him, you know, I gave you a son miraculously, now go and slaughter the son. It's a very similar nisayon to the one presented to the Isha Shunamis, almost identical. I gave you a son miraculously, now I'm taking the son away. Right? And Avram is only able to get through that ordeal and to pass his test with flying colors by basically displaying incredible emunah and be talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Look, I don't understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, and I'm going to do. And ultimately HaKadosh Baruch Hu rewards Avram Avinu in the greatest sense for passing that nisayon, Hashem v'Elokim nisayos Avram. The same v'Elokim nisayos Avram is essentially the nisayon which is presented to Isha Shunamis. She's not asked to physically go herself and kill her child, but certainly the kind of emunah and bitachon which is demanded from her in the face of having her child taken away, in which she displays so admirably, is really following in the footsteps of an Avraham Avinu. So I think when you look at the two stories from that perspective, the notion of emunah and bitachon which these women display, you can see on a deeper level as well, not just the you're going to have a child after a year theme, which is clearly a connection between the Sedra and the Haftarah, but the deeper concept of developing emunah and bitachon and maintaining emunah and bitachon in the face of questions and tragedy and all kinds of difficulties, that's the message which the Haftarah fleshes out, is a message which we ultimately learn from the Sedra as well.
I just want to say, I don't think that the woman, the Shunamis, has the same emunah that Avram Avinu had, because Avram never says to the Ribbono Shel Olam, why are you telling me to take my child to the Akedah?
Right.
And she says, why did you give me a child if you're going to take away the child? Avraham Avinu never said that.
Right.
I believe though, you know what it says in that project, that it says that when she asked, when he said he would bring her a son, and then she says, like, see something around me, don't make jokes. I think really in that pasuk there is a section there, and it's actually not here, but I remember learning it, that she does ask subsequently, and she makes a point of saying, and nothing will happen to him, and he will grow. You don't see it in the Haftarah here, but I remember hearing that. Which is why, in the last pasuk in here, she says, do not mislead me. Now, she's not going to say, do not mislead me that you gave me a son, clearly she got one, but do not mislead me that you will never have any harm come upon him, which I think made it more, it was more of a taina to her, you said nothing would ever happen to the son. Now, Avraham, when he was given the son, was never told that one day I'm going to ask for him back. I'm not making the connection saying, Avraham, I'm not, you know. But here she was specific, like, I specifically tell you, nothing will happen to this boy, and now all of a sudden something happens. What just happened?
If he's
going
to have children.
Right, yeah.
Or down
right, absolutely. So I don't think that she's so, you know, out of the box for saying that.
Right. Right. I mean,
when Abraham was told that he would have another child, he was amazed. He said, "Lo yichyeh Yishmael
Abanecha." Right. Right.
He wouldn't believe it.
Right. I mean, you know, we can debate back and forth, which we are, as to the comparison between the Isha Shunamis and Avram. There might be, certainly I think we could accept the notion there might be a difference in degree, right? But the basic concept is the same. In other words, it's not a difference in kind. They're both coming from a perspective of tremendous Emun and Bitachon. Whose Emun and Bitachon is higher? All right, so that already, you know.
Is something to do with the sex of the person who's talking of wrong was their father and she was the mother?
Could be. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, you know, you can say that the mother might naturally just feel more attached to the child than the father.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Do you ever think about this kid?
I don't remember. Chazal can say something. I think Itaka goes up to being one of the Nevi'im.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I mean, not on the Madrega of Yitzchak Avinu, but but I think Chazal does say that he goes up to be one of the Nevi'im. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Even before it. Right. Right. No. So the Emunah and Bitachon is brought out even more graphically by ending the story before the happy ending. Right. So that really just underscores the Emunah and Bitachon, which, you know, again, I think is a very, very solid connection to Avraham Avinu and his Emunah, which is demonstrated at the end. Yeah. Interesting. There are some Mefarshim who say that was exactly the sign of Avraham Avinu, because, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu saw Chazal tell us Bas Baklaria Hameira. Moshe Rabbeinu saw these prophecies from God in a very clear fashion. Avraham Avinu, like all the rest of the Nevi'im, saw Bas Baklaria Sheinu Meira. They saw the reception was fuzzy, so to speak. You know, they didn't get a very clear picture. So Avraham Avinu could have said, well, maybe that wasn't really HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Maybe there was something else talking. But everything...
His message to the world.
Right. But everything in Avraham Avinu's experience, apparently up to that point, made him think that must be HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And even though I don't understand it Tzivroi, nonetheless, I see that it's Hashem, and the Nisayon is not to try to dismiss it mentally as being something or somebody else. That was precisely the Nisayon, say some of the Mefarshim, because again the reception was quote unquote so bad, relatively speaking, that, you know, it would have been easy to just say, well, maybe I heard wrong, maybe it was something else, maybe it was somebody else, maybe he meant something else. But Chazal say, by the way, that when you reread the story of the Akedah from the end, Avraham Avinu was told Ha'aleu Sham La'ola, right, bring him up. Right. In other words, not that you have to kill him. Avraham Avinu interpreted Ola means a sacrifice, but Ola just literally means to bring him up. So he brought him up on top of the mountain, right? So he literally fulfilled what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to do after the fact also. It's just that he only really realized that in retrospect, right? He only got the proper interpretation of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu had meant initially after the fact. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in a sense, didn't tell him to do something and then take it back. He just revealed to Avraham Avinu the proper interpretation of what Avraham Avinu had been told initially. So that's a certain perspective on the story, which I think helps us perhaps understand the story a little bit better. Okay, Bezus Hashem, we'll pick up next week with the Haftarah of Chayisara.